Welcome to our Across the Nations podcast. I'm Jim Sayers, and in this edition, I'm talking to Hansen Manova. Hansen is a pastor in Namakkal in Tamil Nadu, India, and he came to visit us in October 2019, and we chatted about the whole situation in southern India at the present time and his ministry. And India has a very special place in our hearts at GBM because it's where our work began and where, for over a century, all our missionaries worked. So we hope that this gives you a really good sense of what is going on in India today.
Hansen, it's lovely to meet you. It's lovely to have you here in Abingdon after GBM's work in India has been so much a part of what we've done. I want to start with your ministry over the last 10 years or so. You've been up on the border with Karnataka in Tamil Nadu in a town called Hosur.
Yeah.
Tell us what you've been doing there.
I went for my higher seminary education in Hosur in an institute called as Evangelical Theological Seminary run by Asian Christian Academy. And it was in 2002 to 2005. And during those days, I partnered with one of our professors who was actually from a different state called as Kerala. And he was a cross-cultural missionary who wanted to start a church in Hosur in the state of Tamil Nadu. So he wanted my help in translating the messages, leading these surveys, and helping him with evangelism. So that's how we started into this church planting ministry. Of course, he was working there from 97. And in 2002, he was thinking about closing down the Tamil church and start an English church. That's when I was able to partner with him. And in 2005, I got graduated. In 2006, I started as a church planter, supported by the seminary to work with my professor. And we started with the English reading room for the public. So where people can come.
That's unusual.
Come and read different literatures in English. And we also had a English spoken English class. So we used examples from the scripture for the English lessons. So those were the initial activities of building relationship with the public, and later God blessed us with about 10 people through those evangelistic efforts. Then we focused on discipling them, teaching them the scripture, and they will go and introduce the gospel to their different friends, and if someone is interested, they will bring them to the church, or they will inform us, why can't you meet with this person? And since Hosur is a growing town, like we have plenty of industries. We have a major truck industry called as Ashok Leyland, and a TVS Motor Company. And
those sound to me like old British companies that have moved to India.
So we have lots of people migrating to this town. And we had the opportunities to meet with them, share the gospel. And now we have about 150 members in the church and with a group of elders and two pastors.
So is that now an English church or a Tamil church?
No, it's a bilingual church. We have services in both English. So we'll sing songs in... Actually, we'll sing songs in three or four different languages because we have five different language-speaking group there. But it is bilingual. We'll always have a translation into Tamil to English or English to Tamil for the people who cannot understand the Tamil.
That's an interesting challenge, wherever it happens across the world, yeah.
And then we were also able to start a Hindi service in the evening for Hindi-speaking population who do not know English, because many Hindi-speaking people migrate from North India to South India now, and it's very difficult to go and reach them in their own villages. But when they come here, they come for life and new things, and we were also able to start a service for the hearing impaired. We are an evangelist. There is a ministry called as Door Ministry who translate the scriptures for the hearing impaired people. And they had one evangelist, but no place to gather.
So is this in sign language?
In sign language. So we were able, then they asked us, will your church be interested in helping us to start a ministry among the hearing impaired people? And now we have about 35 people regularly attending that service.
And that's a huge challenge, isn't it? Because in Hindu culture, how would those people be seen?
In the Hindu religion, people think it's all because of your fate. Some bad karma you did in your previous birth has made you to be like this. And there is not much social support for them. And some of them are even not taken well, good care in their family. And the government has plenty of policies to support them. So since Hosur has many industries, small scale and large scale, each industry has to employ a certain number of disabled people in
there. Okay. That's quite a change.
Yeah. So that's why we have these people coming in there. So they may have a financial stability because of their employment, but socially they are aloof. Like, see, when we want to begin a work among them, one of the problems is they don't want to trust us.
Right.
Because even their own family members, they're always seen as cursed people in the society. So they were not able to understand our genuine love for them. That's the reason what we did was, with the help of the Door Ministry, they trained a hearing impaired person to preach the gospel and teach the scriptures to them. And through them, we were able to reach. And when we were able to do that, we were not able to win any soul. But this hearing impaired person comes and he has a friend, he brought him. So these two people went and shared the gospel. And I think last December for the Christmas, we had nearly 100 people for the Christmas event. You know, and it's a beautiful thing to watch them.
There's 100 people who are deaf.
Yeah.
From country to country, we call them different things.
Okay,
but we have a missionary in Austria who refers to them as the Austrian deaf.
Okay.
And that's how they wish to be identified.
Oh, okay.
But that's fascinating, yeah. And it's interesting, isn't it, that India is a very multilingual country, and there's a lot more population migration now. So that brings its own tensions. Is Hindi going to become the language, the lingua franca, as it were, or will it be English, do you think?
We're not sure, because the South Indian population, or the people in South India, it's a little difficult for us to pick up Hindi.
Hindi is a very different language.
Yeah,
is it?
Hindi. Actually, Hindi is spoken by a small minority in India, but it is pretty similar to several Indian, North Indian languages. Like if you go to Madhya Pradesh, they have their own dialects. Maharashtra, they have their own dialects. Bihar, Orissa. Every language has their own language and different dialects. But Hindi is kind of connecting language.
It's a bit like Swahili in East Africa.
Yeah. So in the North India, Hindi is pretty more popular, but in South India, it's not that popular.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was growing up and studying in the school, most of our schools did not have Hindi. Because back then they encouraged the regional languages, and but my children, they have to do they have to study Hindi. It's not an option. They have to actually do it as a second language. And in a sense, I like it, because they learn more languages. Because being an Indian, when I go out of my state, I'm not able to connect with other people because I don't know Hindi. So I really like my children learning Hindi. But at the same time, sometimes in the name of a language, people can also exercise their authority over the others. That's the only thing the southern states are against.
Right. Yeah. Now, moving on, you were in Hosur for over a decade.
Since 2017 years.
Yeah, and that's where you met your wife, Jocelyn.
Yeah.
But now you have this year, 2019, moved back to Namakkal, which is your roots, isn't it? So why have you moved to Namakkal?
Yeah, it's an interesting story. Actually, my dad is the pastor at the Tamil Baptist Church in Namakkal since 1980. And so in my childhood, I was very much offended and hurt because of many struggles we went through as a family. My dad as a pastor, because that's the time when he was the first Indian pastor after the missionaries. And then there were some people who want to grab the property. And so they were always troubling the church. And so first of all, I never wanted to be in the ministry because of seeing all those things.
Your dad's experience completely put you off.
Yeah. But after my we call it plus two, the final years of my school. One day we took a trip with my dad. That was for the annual convention of the Baptist churches. It used to happen in a city called as Madurai. And since we were at home, my dad took me in the motorcycle and we traveled nearly like 700 kilometers going to all these different churches and inviting them for that camp. And we went, we visited a place called as Panayadipatti. Where the missionaries worked, and literally nothing was there. There used to be a hospital, a chapel, and then I guess they had a small Bible training program over there. While looking at those desolate structures, I asked my dad, you are a pastor of Tamil Baptist Church, and why are you not doing anything regarding this? Then my dad said, we want to actually work much in a broader way, but only I and Pastor Sam, or now it is like in 1997. So only we two are actually trying to coordinate and bring some unity. And so in those days, young people from Britain, they felt a need for India. They came with their families, they served. But now our young people always want to go abroad.
Right.
Now, I think he particularly mentioned that statement because I was having that inspiration to go and live in a different country, in one of the Western countries after my education. So that really struck me. And I thought, okay, I should be in the mission. That was my initial thought. So I went to a Bible college after my school, then finished my higher education, then started working as an assistant professor in the seminary in Hosur. Then for a long time, I was not associated with the Tamil Baptist ministries. I thought there is there will not be any progress. Maybe after the pastors who are now the churches are going to die. But I used to attend all the annual retreats or convention, whatever that is arranged. So in one of the conventions, I was having a casual chat with Pastor Samuel Devanesan and my dad and a few other pastors, and I felt there is a need for us to get involved, because many of the younger generation from Tamil Baptist churches, we go out and serve in different missions. It has a big impact in the mission of India, but not in our Tamil Baptist churches. We started a lay people training program in Namakkal. I said, okay, let me help in this way. In 2008 to 2012, I was doing my Doctor of Ministry program, and it is a case study based studies. So I did two case studies on the Tamil Baptist churches to see why our churches are not growing.
Yeah.
Then I found out that the lay people's involvement in our church is very minimal. Only few pastors are doing everything in the churches, and the lay people are pretty much spectators. And they give their offerings and they don't get involved in the church ministry. So I did a research on the nature of the involvement of lay people in the Tamil Baptist churches. And for that research, I had to go back to the history and learn how the missionaries did it and what's the difference. So while doing this research, one thing that struck me was my town, Namakkal, has only 0.8% Christianity, the least populated Christian district in India.
Or in Tamil Nadu?
In Tamil Nadu, I'm sorry.
Start that sentence again. We can always cut. Yeah.
Okay. So my town, Namakkal, has only 0.8% Christianity. It is the least populated Christian populated district in Tamil Nadu. That really struck me, because always people talk about mission in North India where there are less than 1% Christians. But here I am, my hometown. It has only 0.8% Christianity. And immediately Acts 1:8 came to my mind. You be my witnesses at Jerusalem, at your home first. And I was thinking, I abandoned my home. I'm wandering everywhere with this gospel and planting churches and helping missions, but we should go back. So while we were thinking in this way, and myself and my wife, we were praying about it, because we both had good jobs and our children were doing well, we were living in a better atmosphere. So going back to Namakkal, many people advised don't do that. So as we were praying, and suddenly my dad felt ill, and he needed some assistance. And we were thinking like we'll go on weekends and we will help him. So for the past 2 years, we did that every weekend, like Friday. We had to travel about 250 kilometers after the children's school, and both of us come back from work, we'll start. And Saturday, Sunday, we'll stay with the church. And Sunday by 8 p.m., we'll start from Namakkal. Like, we did for 2 years, and then I was able to see the need in Namakkal, the church. So finally, in the last May, we decided like we'll go as a family and we'll work there.
So what is the Tamil Baptist Church like in Namakkal now? You meet in an interesting building which was built not by Baptists. Is that right? It looks like an English parish church, doesn't it?
The building was actually, it was built in 1902 to 1904 by the London Missionary Society. And then I think in 1923 or 1932, one of these dates, I'm confused.
Yeah.
Mr. D. Morling, who was the...
David Morling.
David Morling. He was in Sainthamangalam. He established the church there. Then he bought this church and a few acres of land and started the service there. And he started a day school. It was a primary school. Now that school has grown up to be a senior secondary school. Earlier it was up to grade 1 to 5. And then they moved from grade 1 to 8 and 1 to 10. Now we have from grade 1 to 12th.
So the whole range of schooling. Yeah. And how many children are in the school now?
Nearly 700 children or most of them are in the high school. I think from classes 1 to 5, there will be 160 children. But the high school is doing very well.
And these children are getting a Christian worldview education.
Which
is unusual.
Yeah, everything is absolutely free.
The state funds the school.
Teachers are paid by the state, and we have to actually employ some management staff. We have nearly, I guess, eight staffs. We have to raise funds and pay for them.
Just keep your hands off your trousers. Just have your hands in your lap. Yeah. That's fine. Yeah. So that has a big influence because the children are getting education through a Christian worldview.
Not just the children. No, we have a morning prayer every day where our Christian teachers will read a Bible verse and teach a Christian story or Christian worldviews or been taught.
Is this the school that Graham Field came to? We have a photo of Graham Field taking an assembly.
Probably.
We'll look that up. Yeah.
So and then through them we are able to connect to their families. Like sometime a child will be doing very bad in the school, so we want to know what happened to the child. So we call the parent and talk to the parent, and then we find here is a man who is an alcoholic. Her father is an alcoholic. So we are able to work with them. It's much more broad. It's not, if you see 700 individuals, it's 700 individuals, but it helps us to connect with at least 100 families every year.
Yeah.
Not all become believers, but we can do something in their life. And sometimes they may not come to our church, but we are able to connect them with the other churches in their localities. And so the school still has a big impact in the society.
Now, we hear lots of reports from Sam Devanesam of the state of the churches in Chennai, and they seem to be multiplying and growing, and he's always talking about a new branch church and 15 baptisms and so on, and that's a very rosy picture to us. The picture you're giving me of further south is not as rosy, is that? And it's a bigger struggle out in the villages. There are villages where the missionaries started a service, put up a building, and it's since gone. What's the story now?
During the days of the missionaries, the main occupation of the people was agriculture.
Yes.
So most people will stay in their villages and do the farming. But now that's not the case. people like to work in industries or corporate firms or multinational companies. So in a city like Chennai, you'll have migration every day. Thousands of people migrate. I think it's like 12,000 people every day to Chennai. No, that's I'm not sure about the
standard. No, that sounds about right.
Yeah. So the churches grow very fast. And other thing is like in India, even if somebody wants to follow Christ, believe in the gospel and go to the church, if they're living in their native place, there is a social pressure from their family. Like it's a honor shame culture. So when a person goes to the church, the family thinks it's a shame upon them. They have betrayed their gods. But when they come to Chennai, they're independent, they're individuals.
Their family doesn't know what they're doing.
Yeah. So it's actually true in Chennai, the churches are, I think in Chennai, the Christian population is nearly 12%, you know, which is quite unusual for...
It's a lot better than the UK.
But in our places, people leave there for... except the young people, others leave there. So the churches are not multiplying as fast as Chennai, but the Namakkal church was able to plant 4 new churches in the past 20 years. And 2 church plant was done in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. That's like with pastor and a church building and a group of believers. And we also have something called prayer groups, or we call them as cell groups. It is more like these house churches. So we meet in 4 different places now, and the idea is that at some point we'll be able to have a full-fledged church in those localities.
And is that so? These are cell groups branching off from the church at the middle of Namakkal. And you've also talked to me about sort of where there were once gospel works going on, and then the building fell into the wrong hands, and you've been sort of reclaiming buildings and so on. What's been happening there?
There are a few examples, but I can use one called a place called as Irkur. I was talking with Mr. Philip Grist yesterday, and he shared me about his bitter experience where when they want to go to the place with Ivone Langton, they were chased away because one man and few of his friends want to grab that property. But now we have a pastor. Pastor Prince Joshua is working there, and we are able to regain 38 cents of land which the missionaries bought, and God willing, we would like to build a church there. Next year, we have about 25 believers gathering. There is a bigger possibility. You know, there, we have about 20 villages around that place where we can work. Since we had this property issue, we were not able to do it well for the last few years, but now everything has been solved and settled, and we have a pastor there. And once we put up a building, the reason is in India, caste system is pretty much prevalent. So when you have a meeting in the house, it restricts, like, if a person is from a particular class, caste, only a few people will be comfortable to come there.
So they can only reach their own caste through their home.
So having a public place helps us to reach all kinds of people. They think, oh, it's like a temple, like it's a church. We go to a common place. Anyone can come to a temple, so anyone can come to a church. So that's one example of how we could regain. In down south, we were able to do in a place called Narikulam, Achinkulam, Sivasangampatti. These are some place that comes to my mind immediately. And in Koilpatti, they were able to restore a huge amount of property. We are actually encouraging the lay preachers, because we cannot have full-time pastors everywhere. So we are encouraging the lay preachers to go and work in one of the stations on the weekends. So we started a Bible school in Anbinnagaram to train more lay people. They can either start a new work or revive the works where the places where the missionaries work, but now nothing is happening.
Mm-hmm. And training is for you as much of a focus as pastoring.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you are pastoring a church in Namakkal of 100 people or more than that. Yeah. In addition to that, you're very central to what the Tamil Baptist Trust is doing in terms of training. So tell us about the BTH extension course that you've set up. Who's that for? How does it work?
Okay. That's again, out of my doctoral dissertation, one of the things I learned was, see, we always believe in plurality of leadership in the church. We have a group of elders and deacons serving the church. But at some point, our Tamil Baptist churches have moved to a different form of ecclesiology where we have this one pastor and deacons. And deacons primarily don't involve in teaching. They just involve in maintaining the church, organizing the events. So the pastor alone has the burden of evangelizing, discipling, visiting the sick, teaching. So first when I taught to the present pastors about plurality of leadership, many of them were thinking like, it's a doctrine that I want to import from my seminary to the Tamil Baptist churches. So there was opposition to that. Then when we started this lay people training program in Namakkal, I was looking for some materials written by our Tamil Baptist missionaries. So that will be more authentic and people will think that I'm not bringing in some strange doctrines inside the church.
So what did you find?
I found the preacher study papers by Mr. John Appleby. And so I tried to, I converted it into a lecture notes. Basically, I used most of his notes as it is.
So you were teaching John Appleby's Tamil notes, were providing your lecture notes.
Tamil notes, and in some places I have to edit it because certain words are not in use now. And means it's primarily I edited his notes for the present Tamil speakers. Then when I was reading through his notes on church, now there is a study paper on church. And he very clearly talks about a church having elders and deacons. Then we also have this missionary, the church handbook written by the missionaries in Tamil. And it states very clearly that every church should have a group of elders and deacons. What is the role of the elders? What is the role of the deacons? And one of the elders can be the pastor of the church who has the gift of pastoring. So I was so excited, and then I started referring to the church handbook and the preacher study paper by the missionaries. And now in Namakkal, we were able to train nearly 30 people. Already they finished the 2 years of training. And down south, when we wanted to revive these ministries, we want to use lay preachers. And some of these lay preachers did extremely well, like Devadas in Anbinagaram and Selvin in Melapudur. They were able to pastor a congregation of Devadas. He is pastoring a congregation of nearly 300 people with his teaching work in the school. And he's doing a marvelous job. But unfortunately, some of our pastors think that only seminary trained and Bible college students can be the pastors of a church.
The capital P pastor.
Yeah. And again, I showed to them, this idea is not only against me. If a pastor has a seminary education, that's great. Mm. That helps the church. But at the same time, we cannot put a clause saying that only those who are seminary trained can be the pastors. Mm. This is against what the scripture says, and this is against our Tamil Baptist churches. Now, our missionaries did not teach us this way. But still then, there was this hostility or a division. So I talked with Pastor Samuel Devanesan, and we were able to start a Bachelor of Theology program in Anbinagaram, and about 14 pastors or lay preachers who are involved in the church ministry or part of it. It's a 4-year.
So these are men who are pastoring a local church, but they are having to support themselves because they're in a rural situation that's pretty normal, actually, isn't it? In a lot of rural churches, that they're going to have to be bivocational pastors, of thing. Yeah, yeah. But are you training other members of the church to preach as well?
This is for the pastors. Then we also want to train. The vision is that every church should have a strong plurality of leadership, like plural leaders, a leadership team. We have a different program, like Diploma in Theology. It's a 2-year program for lay leaders who are already involved in Sunday school, or women's ministry.
So you have quite a number of women involved in that as well.
Yeah.
And it's quite a society. We need to explain to people that Indian society is quite segregated between men and women, isn't it? And women need to reach women.
Yeah. An example is like we moved to Namakkal, and if I want to visit a family, we'll always go as husband and wife. I'll never go alone unless only men are there in the house. And there's a lot of limitation, like in counseling or in helping with women, the involvement of the pastor's wife and the elderly woman in the church is the key. Yeah. And most of our churches have more women than men. So
we should be training those women to reach women.
And that's more effective, when a woman goes to the women and bring them to the church.
And actually, historically, the work of GBM has all those years of service of the Ladies and Honor Auxiliary and the Bible Women and so on. There was a huge amount being done in India by women missionaries and Indian women workers working with them, wasn't there? Yeah.
And other thing is like a part of our culture, it's a male dominated culture where only you have means like property rights, for example. For a long time, only the sons will have the property right, not the women. So I think culturally, the church has also neglected the role of women. But now, with rising feminism, there is attention for women. And biblically speaking, we have so many women involved in the mission. So, like in both Namakkal and in Anbinagaram, we have 46 people, and in Namakkal, we have about 26.
And this is people who are working with a complementarian framework and so on. Now, one of the things you've mentioned is that, particularly in the urban areas, the sort of Western liberal agenda is starting to make an impact, which is a real surprise for us. We didn't expect that in India. But tell us about some of the issues you're encountering with your young people.
Yeah, I was shocked. Usually our young people will have struggles in their life, like finding the purpose, meaning of their life, or they'll be struggling with sin leading them to salvation. But last December, I was speaking in the youth retreat for the Chennai region. About 17 different churches, 200 plus young people were there in the meeting. And after one of the sessions, I was talking about I was asked to talk on the holiness of God. So after one of the sessions, one girl came to me and my wife as we were having lunch, and she said, "I want to talk with you." I said, "Okay, let's talk." Then she said that she has an identity crisis, whether she's a man or a woman. And she has this temptation to go and do a surgery and become a man.
And transition to a man,
And I was pretty shocked because that's the first time I could come across an issue like that. So then we talked to her about the image of God, the significance of both genders in the sight of God. And she was pretty happy after talking to us. We still keep in touch with her, and she's particularly absolutely fine, and she's moving ahead in her life. We in cities we have the problem of people living together before marriage, which was a taboo earlier, but now it's coming pretty common in big cities. So we have a big because internet is pretty inexpensive in India. There are many companies that supplies internet at a very.
You get better coverage of the cricket than we do in Britain.
So we actually want to have a counseling center. Mm. We are thinking about it. We have a person called Suresh in the Tamil Baptist Church in Chennai. He and his wife, they're taking a few courses on counseling, and my wife is already a behavior therapist. She works among the disabled children, and I'm also doing an MA in psychology and counseling. So at some point, maybe in 3 to 4 years, we may need to have a counseling center in Chennai, possibly because there the issues are much more complicated.
And do you think transgender ideology is going to take root in India? Do you think it's going
to... It's going to take a big root because, in the flight when I was coming to London, there were a couple of Tamil movies, and one of these movies, I was shocked after seeing this movie because it talks about a man who becomes a woman after having a family and a son. And then the whole conclusion of the movie is like, everyone has the right to live the way they want. And what is being prohibited at a point of time will be accepted as a social value after some time. So just because you see it as wrong, don't judge other people. And I was totally shocked because I think you may know the influence of movies in the Indian culture.
Yeah.
And
but we tend to think of that as in an Indian cultural, you know, department that's quite separate from the West.
No. See, yeah. Now, actually, Indian, this postmodern ideology of there is no absolute truth. And everyone has the right to do whatever they want, and we are not supposed to judge anyone.
And that kind of fits with the Hindu culture, doesn't it?
Mostly with the... See, in the Hindu culture, we have even stories of gods, like a male god becoming a Hindu god. Mm. No, and for example, same-sex marriages. Everything happens between gods. Generally, people think that it's a social evil. Mm-hmm. No, even among Hindus, in Hindu families, they don't accept it. The culture doesn't accept it. But now there is a changing value. Like, see, even though it's a new ideology among the young people, there is a story or a myth or a practice in the ancient time to support it. Now, so I don't think it will be. So there are many pro-Hindu writers who are in favor of such ideologies, and even sadly some Christians are supporting it in India. It's becoming a big need for us. You know, the challenge is no more just sharing the gospel, but also trying to help people understand the image of God and the purpose of God in their lives. It's becoming a big challenge.
So what do you think the future is for the Tamil Baptist churches, just looking at the next few years, challenges and opportunities? What we haven't talked about is persecution. it's getting tougher to be a Christian in India?
Yeah, it's always a challenge in India. So persecutions were local earlier. Like there are some, if you take in Tamil Nadu, there were like 3 or 4 regions that was against Christianity, and you cannot do any evangelism there. But now it's spreading all over the country. Like the hostility is becoming all over the country. And sometimes Christians are considered as antisocial, like you're against the nation because your religion is imported from somewhere else. That kind of ideology is growing among many people. And we will not be able to do any public open-air evangelism, like open-air preaching or evangelism. For example, if I go and stand in the street and I say that Jesus is the only true God, somebody can take me to the court saying that I have offended their faith. Because by saying Jesus is the only true God, I'm telling that their gods are not true gods. No. So such kind of issues are there. So now we are trying to reach the society in a different way. One of the things I am always encouraged from my previous church planting effort is personal evangelism is much more effective. So we ask our believers to build relationship, and then we also tell them, like, don't try to convert people, because conversion is the work of God. Only the Spirit of God can make a person a believer. So our work is to show the values of our faith, model Christ's love, unconditional love to them, build relationship. And when they ask you, you know, for example, one of my friends, uncle, he was admitted in Chennai for a open heart surgery, and they wanted blood donors. And his brothers is a member of a parliament, and they were not able to find sufficient donors. So he called me and he said, can you please pray for my uncle? And I asked him what happened. He said, I need at least 6 blood donors within 1 hour of time. So I called the church in Chennai, you know, our friends in the church in Chennai, and they were able to arrange the donors within 1 hour.
They lined up some of their church members and sent them off to give blood. Yeah.
And then everyone did it as a charity, you know, right, to help that family. So 1 week later, I was called for a dinner in that family, and they asked me, like, why did you do this? You know, even our friends and family don't want to do it. So I told them, like, see, this is what Christ wants us to do in this world, show his unconditional love. And my friend, no, I know him for the past 15 years. He has come to church a couple of times, but this time he was curious to know what the gospel is. Can you tell me something more about Christianity? Because the picture that he had is Christians are people who try to convert others, and it's like they brainwash and take you into the church. So we try to encourage our people to involve in the society, do good. Now in Namakkal, God willing, we want to actually start a daycare center for disabled children. You know, we want to, it's a little bit of investment that we have to do from the church, but we can have these children. The purpose is not just to make them Christian. The purpose is to communicate to the society that we love. We see everyone as equal in the sight of God. And God willing, if God works through that work, through that ministry, he may bring in souls to the church. So in this changing scenario, one of the best things that we can do is to show the unconditional love of Christ in as many ways as possible, like visiting the hospital, praying for the sick, helping people, and involving in the society, fighting against the social evil in the society.
Hanson, that's extremely helpful. Thank you so much for talking to us, and we really appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
For more information about our work, visit our website, gbm.org.uk. Grace Baptist Mission is a church-based mission that helps churches to send and support their missionaries worldwide.